This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Welcome to Smell You Later, your favorite podcast about your favorite podcasters.
I'm going to believe that to be true.
You know what? I haven't seen any evidence otherwise. So I love that we have a group chat with Emma from Perfume Room, and the group chat name is called Successful Podcasters. I love
that. We were all texting last week and I was like, you know what? let me spice this up. I can do better than Emma Stapleton. Let me get into this. Yes.
I love it.
Successful podcasters, two of three in the world. Emma and I know I sort of already told you this, but we went out for a drink after the Artiste event. Us girls. It was so cute. It's so funny because besides being my best friend, are like the only person who understands when I bitch and moan about this. Not that I ever would. But, you know, being a fucking podcaster about scents and smells and fragrance, it's like those weird things that come with it, whether it's scheduling or founders or perfumers or publicists, whatever. I'll vent to a friend and realize, like, you sound like a clown. And you get it, of course. But then I'm talking to Emma, not about anything in particular, but I'm like, oh, my God, there are more of us. It's so nice. Community.
Community.
We put the people T in community.
People who understand our unique struggles.
Yes.
Are not that bad, but let's.
No. It was so funny. She and I were leaving, and Carlos from Arcus was like, oh, you're going to go spill all the tea. And we were like, what? No, what are you talking about? And he was like, I know you guys, you're podcasters. You've got all the good tea. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to let you believe that. I don't really agree, but I love the fantasy here. That's all love.
I don't think we've ever upset anyone ever, so.
You know, lies we tell ourselves.
Truth, I choose to believe.
That's okay. It's just fragrance, baby. It's not that deep.
No, it's not.
No.
But there's just so much now. So much going on.
There is so much. There is so much fragrance. There are so many brands. There are so many voices, all of which we lift up and celebrate.
All of which we are scrambling to keep up with.
Listen, we're running our own race.
Oh my gosh, I wanted to tell you, currently, I don't know if, I feel like by the time this episode airs, this will be unembargoed, but
oh
I'm
God,
using...
you're digging a grave, girl, but what are you wearing?
Not wearing, but I am using the Himalayan cashmere.
Oh, cool.
Right now, in a cycle. I literally received it today, and I was like, time to do laundry. Just threw it in.
That will be out Friday, so I mean,
okay, cool.
Wait, you like it?
It's so nice.
Oh, good.
It smells more perfumey than I expected, by which I mean, I think from my concept of, I don't know why I think this about laundry detergent, because it's like not even true that it would be quite transparent and veil-like, but it's quite, it's got a good like weight to it, or like a nice heft where it's really plushy and it's cozy and comforting and clean and musky smelling. But it's certainly not flimsy or weak at all. You're going to smell it.
The way that I'm going to use that quote without your permission.
Please
do. I don't want to talk about work on this podcast. it's fine. It's funny. So I am actually really happy to hear you say that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cashmere happening right now. And
there is.
Which is cool. And, you know, I was not here when this scent was starting to be developed and locked and everything. So I can't really take credit for the scent itself or being part of that, just the campaign and all. But what I will say in talking to our perfumer, Sabine, who is a genius, she was telling me that it's not lighter and not any less complex. It's just built a little differently to be a bit, in her words, because I was just editing them, rounder. And I don't want to say there's less in it, like less is more, but it was just a different approach to get a really consistent signature, bold but soft scent. It's sort of like softness through boldness. I don't know. I'm so tired and I've been working on this thing for so fucking long. But yeah, I actually, I have mods of all of the scent options for the next like 2 years. But that one I have only smelled once, and it was way back because I was not the keeper of that mod. So I finally got to resmell it this weekend. And so it was good to sort of familiarize myself with that again.
I mean, it's so nice.
Yeah, I think this one goes a little bit more floral musk, because right now I feel like all these cashmeres are just vanilla, like in your face, which I mean, I have no problem with, obviously.
Yeah.
But to me, that's not maybe exactly what cashmere is. To me, cashmere is Velocity Fresh Cream or Super Amber from Alice Brooklyn, my new favorite. Mm-hmm. Just sort of things that maybe not even that light, but not specifically sweet, but not specifically any one thing. And I think this takes a different direction that I'm excited for people to smell.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I was pleasantly surprised that it was more of a floral cashmere than a vanilla cashmere. I was expecting more vanilla, and then I got more floral, and I was like, oh, that's really nice. That's like a, it's like a nice perfumey smell.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear you say that. I'm excited to experience it, because obviously smelling it in what we call the neat version, like the just like the pods or the booster, is not the experience you get. So I'm excited.
Right.
And notably, it is hypoallergenic, which is
difficult to get. Not everybody has that.
Which is exciting because oftentimes anything fragranced is not hypoallergenic because fragrance itself is an irritant. But we passed all of our clinicals. I dug them up without anyone's permission. I looked through them and we are telling the truth. So it's exciting.
Oh my God, it's the labradoodle of laundry detergent.
What if I get fired by the time this comes out? This is going to be some clownery. Anyway.
We will re-record this and trash it.
I would never.
But it's nice. And I know, obviously, like when you make a perfume for a laundry detergent that's going to, you know, get rinsed and then heated in the dryer.
Yeah.
Obviously, the end result's going to be different, which is also why it was like, you know, I opened it. I just like stuck my face in the box and inhaled. And I was like, whoa, it's really strong.
Yeah.
But then knowing that it's going to calm down after the cycle, I'm like, this will be really nice, calmed down.
Well, and we test them in each stage. We test them in the neat, we test them in the wet, and we test them in the dry. And when you go out, am I at a good clock for saying this? No, because you record it. When you go out to Firmenich in New Jersey, they have this big, huge, like liminal space of just washers. I'm talking probably like
that's
30
so cool.
Just in a line. Yeah. It's very crazy. And then they have these booths. We'll go out there and figure it out. But they have these booths that are essentially, it's a big white room with glass booths that they either like burn candles in or test the wet stage of the laundry washed in the detergent to test the bloom or test, you know, how it smells in your home. And then they have these big fat ass fans on the ceiling that you flip a switch and it sucks all the air out. So just like cleans it so they can test something else. But it's very, very cool. It's very cool. So
it's all the technical side of scent making, which is very fascinating.
Yeah, isn't it? It's crazy.
Yeah. I like having fancy laundry detergent. It makes me feel very put together.
You are.
Although I still have, now I have like 50 pods left of the French saffron. And now I have, how many comes in a box? Like a lot.
The big ones are the big ones are 69 count. We have a 30 count as well.
69 is an interesting
I didn't choose it, and if I did, I'd have chosen 69. So I can't speak to the fill weight.
So yeah, now I have laundry pods for the next 5 years.
Well, even if you didn't, you know who to call. I saw you on the opt-in list, and I was like, this is such a joke.
I mean, why not? I mean, if they're already going to send it, like, why would I bother you for it when I can just bother the person whose job it is?
See me every week. Sable, what do you smell like today?
Okay, I'm so excited about this one, but I got my little decant of Dhanam white rice.
Oh, word. Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. I love it so much. I was really not expecting to love it as much as I do, but it's like, it's very conceptual. Like, it's not a literal white rice scent. And I feel like I talked about this on a couple weeks ago, but it is the starchiness of rice, that quality. But otherwise, it's quite musky and a little bit like skin musk. It gives me like a cozy, transparent skin musk with a little bit of a freshness reminiscent of the early 2000s like green tea scents.
Yeah.
And then there's like this starchy, ricey quality to it that makes it just like really, really cozy. And that twinge of gourmand that I think just makes it really unique, but it's so pretty. Mm-hmm. And when I wear it, it reminds me of something else. I think just because like I'm a skin scent girly in that I love to smell like nothing. And this is almost like a skin scent gourmand where it's something and nothing at the same time. You get the hint of rice, but otherwise it's just like really pleasantly cozy and fresh.
Yeah. It's- yeah. I wouldn't even call it like, I hear what you're saying. It's got the... It's got a sweetness, like Ambroxan has a sweetness.
Yeah.
It's not sweet, but it's like skin sweetness.
Yeah.
You know,
it's almost like minerally a bit.
Yeah. When I got to that one, I was like, no, I don't really care about this. But so I sort of treat it like a thought experiment, you know, just be like, what is it getting? So nice. It's, so it was literal enough to really pay off that thought of white rice. But also, you're right. There's enough going on within to make it a true fragrance. And I agree with you. It's like just like the tiniest bit floral without pulling any which direction. And I completely agree with you. I was like, if the skin scent girls knew about this, it would be over.
Honestly, it reminds me a lot of Dead Cool Extra Milk plus rice, like plus starch.
Yeah. Yeah, I see it. And it's also hard to pin down. And I would almost venture to say that it's one of the, and I know fragrance does this, but, you know, would really wear differently on everyone.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Totally. I got a little 5 ml bottle, which they do like 5 ml, you get a good, I mean, also considering we have so many fucking fragrances and switch it up all the time, like this will last me for a long time, but I am excited to take it with me on a trip and have that be the scent of that trip.
I love that.
Yeah. Tynan, what are you smelling today?
I put this on this morning and I really fell in love with it then and throughout the day. And I was going to actually switch it up because there's something I'm dying to talk about on the show, but I almost got the bottle out and I was like, you know what? No, you're really fucking liking this. Why would you switch it? I'm wearing Rouge from Serviette. And listen, I'm 3 out of 4 perfumes through the discovery set and I'm really liking each and every one of them. This one especially, it's like very bright and juicy and tangy, and it's not like this, but it sort of is fruity in the way that Pulp or Bibliotheque from Byredo are fruity. It's like really indulgent and overripe and I just sort of like almost biting in a way, but it actually is sort of akin to those. Wow, I'm a genius, but it's so nice. And the wear of it too is really consistent and sustained in a way that satisfies me because I'm sick and fucking tired of things wearing off me. Not even that sweaty or whatever, but it's so, so nice. Not that I expected anything different. I just don't think you know when you really hyperfixate on one thing and then other things come into your periphery? That's sort of happening. And again, like Byronic Hero, the one that I spoke about a few episodes ago, the notes don't really tell the whole story in a way that I think is really compelling, but it's the top is black pepper, pink pepper, and nutmeg. The middle is galbanum and raspberry, and the base is patchouli and sandalwood. And if you're going to tell me that, I'd be like, okay. But this, it's just like... such an interesting and exciting and enjoyable wear. I think a lot of the raspberry is pulling up and mixing with that pepper for this. I was going to call the fruitiness almost a little bit spicy. And I think that would make sense. And it's not like a one note raspberries, you know what I mean? It's very just sort of almost, again, how I say this a lot, it's almost like a fermented fruit. It's so good. So good.
Wow, that's really exciting. I feel like raspberry is always a note that I feel surprises and delights me because no matter what fragrance I smell that calls out raspberry, they're all wildly different.
Yes, I was actually going to say the exact opposite. I feel like, I feel like when, you know, and I love a mass fruity scent, but listen, I'm not shooting shots here. I'm just like, what, you know, if it's a Burberry Her or a Flower Bomb, you know, and they say raspberry, you're going to get a really enjoyable raspberry. You know what I mean? That might not blow your mind, but if you like raspberry, you're probably going to like this. This is not that. And I like both. Don't get me wrong. But it's definitely an unexpected. I mean, I really wouldn't. The fact that there's only one true Baron here is kind of blowing my mind, because it feels like there's so much going on in that sort of area of scent. Yeah, it's so good. And I'm definitely mispronouncing it, but you're going to have to go with me.
I always, my like, in my brain, my raspberry benchmark is Mugler Angel Nova, which is the pink star.
The way that everyone cares about that, and I don't.
It's funny. I never wear it. I have a bottle just because I enjoy smelling it, but it's just like all the angel scents. It's just a hat on a hat, you know? So it's just like raspberry.
Yeah.
But it's enjoyable. And then I like it, obviously, you know, 2 hours later once it's dried down. But like that raspberry like stays like throughout the wear.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like Burberry Her.
I think that's strawberry, to be fair, but you know what I mean. It's strawberry, sort of like when you get that.
I think
it's
there's
like
a little bit of like other berries in there too. Yeah. Or what's the other one? Prada Rhubarb, I think, has a bit of raspberry in it as well.
Okay.
But it gives it like a tartness that I enjoy.
Yeah.
Like, I love rhubarb, so obviously I like tart shit, but
yeah,
raspberry is a tart fruit. I like when the fruit is a little tarty and has like attitude.
Yeah. Ugh, I love it. Serviette. I don't know. Working me out. Trey,
I need to dive into that discovery set soon.
I feel like we smell a lot of things, and
we do.
I need to wear it through the fourth one before I start, you know, formulating a thought. God forbid, but
yes.
Well, Sable, who do we have today?
I feel like we have sort of been talking to this brand on the outskirts for like years at this point to get them on the podcast. And they're either based in France or in the Middle East. So the time difference makes it really, really inconvenient.
We can usually work with the time difference, but this one is especially challenging. So
yes, but I'm really glad to reconnect with Reynaud from Amouage. I've been a fan of Amouage for a couple of years now. I think everything they do is so exquisite. Mm-hmm. And so, dare I say, I mean, it is luxury in the TM sense, but also it's luxury in like the craftsmanship sense. I feel like they really, really live the meaning of the word. And that everything is handcrafted, everything is custom, everything is, all of the details are so, so thought of, and all of the raw materials are, you know, very carefully sourced and harvested and used, which I think is like at least what I consider the definition of luxury.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the perfume world, they did have a moment when Guidance popped off, I think like 2 years ago, maybe at this point.
Yeah.
And I got a bottle of it early on before, I think like as Amouage was just starting to like make effort to enter the US, I suppose. Sure. And
you know, drive awareness.
Build a presence in the US. Yeah. And the way I got so many compliments every time I wore Guidance, and I knew, I was like, okay, this is going to be their hit. This is going to be the girl, the ambassador for the brand. And sure enough, like I didn't even post about it that much, but it just like blew up on TikTok. And then suddenly Amouage was it.
Which makes total sense, because I feel like it's one of those fragrances that got something for everyone. Because you're a fragrance lover, there's so much happening that you're going to want to devour it. But if you're new to fragrance, it is still digestible enough that it's like, oh, it's rosy, or it's a little juicy, or, you know, it's really spicy. It's all of these things really well balanced. And I feel like we see people trying for it in a lot of more recent releases, but it's like, no, this is the benchmark for a lot of others. So
yeah, it's certainly a familiar scent profile, but done in a very unique way, which is, I think, what a lot of the Amouage scents are. I have their mega all-star gift set that has every single, it's like a discovery set that has every single scent. And there's,
oh
like,
my God, do you?
50 of them. I think it's like, it's right there.
Oh, it's my God. Closet. Amouage, feel free to send me that. don't hesitate. Yeah.
And I had so much fun just going through all of them with my little blotters as if I was playing like Battleship or like Guess Who. Like, all so funny. Sticking up. But they're also exquisite. They're also really, really, I don't want to say loud. I don't mean that derogatorily, but like you will smell them from miles and hours away.
Yeah. And thank God.
I think also they're a big contender in the beast mode scent space. So
They invented beast mode scents.
They invented beast mode scents for sure. But yeah, I'm really excited to get to know the brand more through Reynaud, and also kind of like I think a lot of the stuff we discussed is stuff that I like sort of already knew, but I don't think a lot of people who are familiar with Amouage know.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to have Fernand talk about that too.
Let's do it.
As the holidays approach, it's time to return to the classics. Flaky pie crusts, perfectly browned butter, and cookies with just the right texture. And one ingredient you cannot compromise on is Kerrygold butter. Kerrygold butter is crafted with milk from grass-fed cows that graze on lush green pastures across family farms in Ireland. The result? A rich, creamy butter with a high butterfat content that elevates every recipe. Whether you're making signature shortbread or browning butter for a nutty depth in your pecan pie, Kerrygold makes all the difference. The flavor is unmatched, and the texture it brings to baked goods is simply divine. So this holiday season, if you're baking for loved ones or just for yourself, reach for Kerrygold. It's the butter of choice, and your pies, your cookies, and your cakes will thank you.
My name is Renaud Salmon. I was born in Belgium, and I'm the creative director of Amouage.
Excellent.
Amazing. And Renaud, what do you smell like today?
Well, today I smell like Luban Alagdar. So Luban Alagdar is an attar of Amouage, a pure oil of Amouage that I really love. It's one of my latest creation together with Quentin Biche.
Oh, okay. Nice.
It's quite a confidential creation because it's one of our pure oils. So the distribution of them is quite limited. Just to give you an idea, it's a short formula, 9 different ingredients. Most of them are resins. It smells very vibrant. I mean, relatively complex, but quite transparent at the same time. So something I like to wear.
Nice.
Sounds really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if it's super exclusive, then I only want it more. So you know what you're doing. We always sort of like to set the stage here, just get to know our guests sort of before we dive into the brand of it all and just sort of understand what fragrance meant to you sort of growing up. It doesn't have to be fine fragrance and could be any, you know, everyday thing like fresh cut grass or coffee but what fragrances were impactful to you along your way?
Well, that's a good one. I mean, I think first of all, I grew up surrounded by fragrances and I did not even realize I had the chance to be born in the countryside of Belgium. My father was a passionate gardener. So he would, like for me, it would be normal to see my father spending his weekends actually in the garden, just like cutting flowers, smelling flowers and so on. And I would go with my grandfather's picking mushrooms in the forest. So I would, you know, I would have this natural, I would say, connection with nature and the smells of nature and so on in general. And then I guess, you know, like when high school started, like the first, you know, like the first relationship with friends, girlfriends and relationships and fragrances, then work. And then a few important people in my life and so on who were very loyal to some fragrances. My mother was wearing L'Odyssée, for example. So she was a big fan of that. Mm-hmm. My father was wearing Dior Eau Sauvage. And that's pretty much what I've been growing with.
Two classics.
Yeah, right? The original Sauvage really paved the
way. I know. I didn't even realize such a history.
Very different than what we know now.
I know.
Today is Sauvage, thank God.
Yeah.
very, very different. I loved, I mean, not only the fragrance, but I loved the texture of the bottle as well. It had like, you know, like this ripped type of glass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the beveled glass, right?
Beautiful. Like, I love just, like, wearing it in the bathroom. It felt very, I don't know, very masculine in a way.
Yeah. Vibes. Yeah. What was the fragrance culture like in Belgium when you were growing up?
Huh. I mean, I would say very basic in a way. So I did not have the chance to live, you know, in touch with artists, like fashion people and so on. It came only later. So for me, I mean, people around me were very simple and so on. So fragrances were considered like maybe an unnecessary luxury in a way. So it felt very basic, but very natural as well. Like, I think, you know, thanks to that, I think I'm very aware of the simple smell of things and the authentic smell of things, which might be a good thing.
That's nice. I am like a little surprised that you said it was basic, because I would think that like in Europe, fragrance culture is so embedded.
And you know, it probably is, but most likely in big cities or in you know, like in, I would say, artistic environments or business environments and so on. But yeah, I was really raised in a like very simple context and people were, I mean, it did not appear to me to be very into fashion, fragrances and so on.
That's interesting. Yeah. I think I remember probably from a former Amouage event or interview that you originally wanted to work in fashion. So exactly. how did you get from fashion to fragrance?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, so I grew up when the internet became a thing. Like, I remember my father, like, getting his first, like, big computer for work. And that computer was connected to the internet with that weird noise and so on. And with websites, you know, loading very slowly and so on. And one of the first websites I recall was actually a fashion website. And that's when I got really into fashion, the school of Antwerp and so on and all of that. So one day I told my parents I want to be a fashion designer. And my parents said, well, what did we do actually to deserve that, you know? Because for some reason, that world was associated with superficiality and everything materialistic and so on. Like, all values that my family was definitely, you know, like, I mean, I would not say rejecting, but very far from. And I mean, they were really against it. They told me, like, listen, you're going to get a proper job and then you can do whatever you want once you have a proper job and you make your own money and so on. So actually, I went to study at the closest business school to my hometown. But at the same time, I started actually studying photography in parallel at an art school. And when I graduated, I applied with my CV from a business school and my portfolio of pictures from my, I would say, more artistic background. And people were a little bit puzzled. I applied to luxury companies and so on. I remember being rejected by every single big name, you know, that I was like, dreaming about and so on. I still have those letters I wrote, you know, and it felt very frustrating. And one company accepted my profile. That company was named Delvaux and is named Delvaux. It's a like luxury leather good manufacturer from Belgium. And that's how it all started. So I started actually in leather goods, sourcing what we call exotic leathers, like, you know, galusha, lizard, ostrich, crocodile and so on. And that's when I became familiar with material. And then the next job was at Louis Vuitton, a little bit in the same field. Again, you know, material, sourcing of materials. And after that, the next job was responsible for fragrances for Dolce & Gabbana. And I, in my mind, you know, I was like, I was probably going from one field to the other in order to understand like the full picture when it comes to, you know, becoming a fashion designer or like a person like, you know, with that type of profile. But actually, after that job at Dolce & Gabbana fragrances, I fell really in love with the world of fragrances. And since then, I've stayed in fragrances.
I feel like Dolce had a lot of really popular fragrances at that time, too. So
exactly. So I worked, like, one of the first fragrances I worked on was the one for men. So that was like around, when was it? 2008, if I'm not wrong. So 2008, the one for men.
Yeah, light blue, I remember, was like one of the most popular scents around that time.
Exactly. I mean, it's a beautiful, it's one of those beautiful fragrances. I think it's Olivier Crespe who created I mean, what I love about it is that it has this beautiful blend of citruses, musks. You know, it's fresh, but at the same time, it's extremely diffusive and long-lasting, at least the first iteration. I don't know today, but it was one of those fragrances that you could smell around because they were diffusive. They were like very long-lasting and so on.
Yeah, every girl in my high school smelled like that.
I mean, every guy in my high school smelled like it too, you know? It was one of those big ones of that time.
Yeah.
Having had one foot in fashion and one foot in fragrance, how would you say that the industries are like, or maybe not even the industries, just working within them? How are they like, and then maybe how are they different?
Well, I mean, I think it's very different to create fragrances within a fashion context than to create fragrances for a proper, you know, perfumer. Because when you create fragrances in a fashion context, I think the fragrances are there to an extent, you know, to bring to life as an extension of the vision of fashion. And sometimes you might argue that they are very disconnected from fashion, sometimes they feel a little bit more cohesive. But ultimately, fragrances are there as a way to fund the more expensive fashion activities, like, let's say, the fashion shows and so on and all of that. Everyone kind of accept the fact that the fragrances are the most commercial part of a fashion activity. In most cases, it's quite rare to have, you know, like a commercial fashion brand that would have a very niche fragrance offer. Usually it goes the other way around. When it comes to creating fragrances, for example, for Amouage, or I assume, you know, another exclusively focused on perfume house, it's the core business. So it's quite different from that point of view. And it's all about the fragrances first. And then, you know, it's more about the ingredients. It's more about the craft of making fragrances.
That's interesting because your title at Amouage is creative director, which I feel like not many fragrance brands necessarily have a creative director or have the creative director as the face of the brand. So for our listeners who maybe aren't sure about that, what does being a creative director of a fragrance brand entail?
That's a good one because, I mean, it's a bit, you know, like being a conductor and trying to align artistic sensitivities of different expertise that are mandatory actually when it comes to creating fragrances. So when you want to create a fragrance, obviously you need a nose. I'm not a nose. However, I'm a trained perfume evaluator and so on. So it gives me the possibility actually to evaluate fragrances when it comes to how they feel, you know, like their style, their nuances and so on. When you want to create a fragrance, you need a bottle. So you need to work with bottle designers, bottle decorators and so on, and different suppliers as well. You need packaging, which means, you know, artworks and all of that. So everything that has to do with graphics. You most likely need imagery, like campaign images, movies and all of that and so on. So it means as well working with people who are either like photographers or filmmakers and all of that and so on. And my background helps in all of that. But at the same time, you know, even if I'm shooting things myself, most of the time I don't. And then obviously you need boutiques, you need like, you know, I mean, everything, websites and all of that and so on. So this has to do with architecture, web design and so on. So, you know, I think my job is really about making sure that all of those artistic sensitivities align and converge in order to create something that is going to feel very cohesive for anyone who is interested in Amouage.
Oh my God. I feel like you just described like five different jobs.
I mean, to be honest, it's not a 9-to-5 job. Like, yeah. It's my life, mm-hmm. But I think it's a very rewarding one because I'm not, you know, I'm not like siloed into one specific expertise.
Yeah.
I really get the chance to touch a little bit of everything.
Yeah, it really is like your whole vision being co-created by the whole brand. That's so cool.
And I guess, you know, it means like being capable of connecting the different senses. So some people would say, well, you know, like people like to say it's about synesthesia and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's probably more basic than that. It's just, you know, like being able to articulate and to narrow down, you know, how, like, let's say, you know, like, for example, you want to convey something authentic, like the notion of authenticity or something, you know, a bit rough and natural and so on. Well, when it comes to the fragrance, you want the ingredients to be smelled properly and so on. You don't want a fragrance that is too blended. So, you know, that's the way it would apply to the fragrance. When you talk about the bottle, maybe you want to look into a ceramic texture or something like that. So something that will have a bit of a texture. When it comes to the photography, maybe I'm going to ask the photographer to work on film photography in order to have that grain in the image and so on that I like. And then when it comes to the architecture, most likely I will ask my architect, well, could we use a stone that is a bit porous, you know, like travertine or something like that, and make sure that the treatment of the travertine leaves, you know, those gaps opened and so on in the stone and all of that. I mean, that's basically what I'm doing, you know, making sure that the artistic choices are cohesive across the different fields.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you're storytelling not only with the campaigns, but since you have, you know, experiential touch points, you want the location or the venue to tell the same story that the fragrances do and the bottles and everything. It's all part of like the bigger cohesive universe, right?
Totally. And I think it's needed today because there is so much noise in perfumery in general. And when I say noise, I mean, it's not something negative, but there's just so much going on and so on. If you want to stand out, if you want to be seen and remembered and ultimately smelled and worn by people, I think you need something that has an impact. And the way to create impact, obviously, you know, you can be brash and loud and all of that and so on, but I think a chicer way to make an impact is probably to be very single-minded and cohesive and to stand out, you know, by that type of, I mean, I would not say quiet statement, but just like simple, narrow-minded statement.
Yeah. Like I realized a lot of the Amouage collections are conceptual in that the names it'll be a single word name that is a virtue, like guidance. I thought of guidance because I know guidance has had a bit of a moment, especially on social media. How do you come up with those concepts? Is that kind of the singular linear thought and then you just build branches from there?
The creative process. So, I mean, what you described is like the aesthetic choice is always, I mean, I like abstraction because I think abstraction gives the possibility to the audience to appropriate themselves, you know, like a name, a concept and so on and all of that. And then it gives the possibility to, for me, you know, to have substance behind it in order for people who really want, you know, to drill down and to say like, okay, I would like to know what's behind the name and so on, actually to dig deeper. But then if you just like guidance, I don't know, for the sound of it, for what it evokes to you and so on and all of that, then this is totally fine as well. But to answer your question about the creative process, so usually my creative process always starts with an emotion that is a very personal and most of the time quite simple, you know, to describe emotion. If we take decision, so decision is one of the latest fragrances that I created together with Quentin Mich. That fragrance was born from a hike. I love to hike. And I took a hike to the summit of Oman. It's called Jebel Shams, the mountain of the sun. And as I was going higher and higher in that mountain, like there was less and less life around me. And ultimately, I was only surrounded by a few beautiful juniper trees. And those juniper trees, some of them were burned. And I was wondering, why do people burn those trees? They are so beautiful. And talking to local people, they told me actually, we don't burn them. They are hit by lightning. When there is a storm, they are hit by lightning because they are the only element that's, you know, stand out on those mountains. And, you know, they told me, but don't worry. They are actually not dead. They will grow again. And I just loved, you know, that looking at those trees gave me a strong emotion. Like I felt, you know, this is so unfair. Like imagine this tree has been growing for like 200 years and then all of a sudden one night, boom, lightning, it's gone. And I felt like this is so unfair. It tells a story about fatality, about something you cannot control and so on that is going to hit you, which resonated very strongly with me because of personal things that happened in my life and so on. However, the message, you know, is a positive one because the tree is not dead and actually, you know, ultimately it's your decision. So that's why the fragrance is called decision. It's your decision to decide actually if you're going to give up and die or if you are going to keep on growing. And that's why the fragrance is named decision. If you don't know the story, you know, it's not going to be obvious. It's not called, you know, like I decide to live when I'm hit by fatality. And I just love, you know, the idea that there are several layers and then people want to, you know, listen to my story, and there are many ways to tell that story. Actually, they might know about it, but again, it's my personal story first. But then comes the process of extrapolation, you know, and that's when I share with the perfumer like different artistic references and so on that talk about the idea of resilience and actually, you know, overgrowing fatality and so on. And that's when it becomes a story about Amouage and a story about more, I would say, universal values, because Amouage is not about me. I'm just like, you know, the creative director finding inspiration most of the time in Oman.
Wow. No. So I guess staying on the topic of creative direction. I would love to understand, because you are truly one of those creative directors that has your hand in everything, like everything that goes out from the brand, everything that is seen, you touch. So I'm curious to know, to the fragrances, especially because you are trained, where does your job stop and the noses start? You know, like where do you sort of pump the brakes?
So, I mean, my job starts by sharing an inspiration, a perfumer I select. So I would select one perfumer. I never pitch two perfumers on the same idea. I don't believe in that. Like, I don't want to waste their time and energy and so on. So I usually, when I have an inspiration, I try to think about which perfumer would be the right perfumer to bring that inspiration to life. And I always think like, okay, do I want someone who has the same referential as me? So usually I would go with someone of my generation and probably, you know, comes from like, I don't know, France or something like that, because we have a very similar referential. Or do I want someone actually to confront my point of view with and so on? And then I would work with a perfumer of a different generation or of a different origin. So that's where my job starts. And then I give that inspiration. My inspiration, most of the time, is not extremely specific when it comes to ingredients and so on. Like I try to keep it relatively abstract at first, just to make sure I get something very uninfluenced from a smell point of view by the perfumer. Mm. And then the perfumer would come back to me with an idea or several ideas actually to translate the inspiration. And then my role is an important one. It is to evaluate and to assess the potential of what I am facing. Because from my experience, that moment is crucial, because sometimes you can fall in love with something, an idea or like, I don't know, a beginning of a formula or something like that. But if that beginning of a formula does not meet certain criteria, it's usually very difficult to get it to a place actually that is going to be a good place. Mm-hmm. So I really need to quickly make my mind about, okay, are we onto something or not? Mm-hmm. And then if we are onto something, then you start actually this kind of ping pong with the perfumer, like, okay, like trying to move the fragrance to a place where you think it's right. And then usually, you know, you kind of grow the idea, and then you realize that the more you push it, it does not grow anymore, and it starts like doing this kind of circle and so on. So that's usually when you've reached the full potential of the ID. And if that assessment at the beginning was the right one, usually it ends up being a fragrance that we release. So that's a little bit, I would say, my role. And then obviously as part of that process, and it's something that I think not a lot of people take the time to do, is wearing fragrances as I develop them. So when people ask me, how long does it take to create a fragrance? Sometimes I answer, you know, like sometimes it takes up to, I would say, 3 to 5 years. Okay. But then they tell me, okay, so you must have done like 1,000 trials or something like that. And actually I tell them sometimes it's only a question of, I don't know, 5 trials. And why is that? Because sometimes I would spend a full year just wearing something. Wow. Trying to make my mind around it, trying to understand, depending on the seasonality, depending on where I am in the world and so on, how people react to it. Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, guidance. I wore and I gave actually samples of guidance to some of my colleagues and so on, like to wear for probably close to a year before deciding to release it. So that's an important part of the process as well.
Wow. Wow. It's a very long focus group.
To an extent, but then the way I, because I would not want you to believe that this is like done in a way actually that is like so long. Like the way I work on a daily basis, I would say I have around like 20 of those different IDs that mm-hmm. I work with parallel. So let's say that I work maybe with, let's say, 7 to 10 perfumers. Each perfumer works on 2 to 3 different IDs. And all of that is happening in parallel. So imagine I have like 20 different thematic inspirations I had and so on, and I continuously work on them. If a fragrance takes between 3 and 5 years to be created, it means that on an annual basis, I can release around 4 fragrances per year without feeling, you know, that pressure to develop a 2 months or 5 months or something like that.
Wow. That's a lot. Yeah, that's like a lot of pots to stir all at once.
Yeah, and a lot of things to have sort of in the works at one time.
Exactly. Like I always have like those binders and I have those boards in my studio in Muscat, and each actually is an ID.
Wow.
I want to see the mood boards. So understanding that Homage has such a global legacy, I'm curious as to how you create newness or innovate while still being brand right and true to a brand that is known globally and has been for so long.
I mean, I think it's important to, for me, it was important when I joined 6 years ago to define, you know, what does Homage stand for? You know, what is it that people like when we say Homage? And the first thing, I came to realize is, you know, if you, like when I arrived, I remember actually asking my CEO, what, just like out of curiosity, what are the best-selling fragrances that we have? And he mentioned actually that the two best-selling fragrances back at the time, so 6 years ago, were Reflection Man and Interlude Man. Mm. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with those two fragrances, mm-hmm. but you're talking about, you know, a fresh barbershop type of fougère fragrance and so on. And on the other hand, you're talking about the darkest oriental fragrance that could exist. And literally, if I have to put those two fragrances on an axis of, you know, like, that they would be on the very two opposites of the axis when it comes to the style, which gave me a clear indication that Homage is not about one style of fragrances. You know, Homage is not your deep, dark, heavy, ambery fragrance. Of course, we have some of them that are like that, but there must be something else, because it cannot be, you know, that the fragrance like Reflection Man talks so much actually to the clients of Homage. If Homage were only to be about like dark, heavy, ambery fragrances. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think Homage is more about a philosophy, which is the philosophy of Oman, which is the philosophy of generosity. So I like to say that the way to guarantee that we create fragrances that feel very Homage is always to act with generosity. Whatever fragrance we are going to create, it needs to be the most generous version of it. So if we do a barbershop fragrance, it's going to be a generous one. If we do a white floral fragrance, it's not going to be your little bouquet of white flowers. It's going to be a big bouquet of white flowers with a lot of nuances and complexity and so on and all of that. And so on and so on and so on. If you do a gourmand fragrance, that gourmand fragrance is actually going to be quite elaborate. You know, it's not going to be sickly sweet and so on. It needs to be refined. It needs to be nuanced and tasteful and so on, but it needs to be generous as well. So that is a way for me to always maintain, I would say, creative and artistic consistency throughout the years. And then I need to make sure that I come up with original creation, because people want original creations from people would not appreciate, you know, if I were to copy another fragrance on the market, or if I were to follow obvious trends on the market and so on. So how do I do that? The first thing is I smell everything on the market. Like I smell everything. I mean, not everything, but as much as possible of what comes out. And not because I want to be influenced, not because I want to benchmark things and so on, but because I want to make sure that I don't create something that is reminiscent or too close to something that is, you know, on the market. And I think it's an important piece of work to do. And then if I want to be original, I need to make sure that the ideas that I work on with the perfumers, usually they start with an accord, you know, of two or three ingredients. I need to make sure that that accord is original and is unique. You know, if we take decision, the main accord is really Aldea, juniper, berry oil, and then vanilla. Well, this is quite original, quite unique. If we take Existence, which is actually the fragrance that came out together with Decision. Existence is an accord that blends together frankincense and lily of the valley. I'm not aware, you know, of any other fragrance that blends actually those two ingredients together as like the main backbone of the fragrance.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the amouage scents that I've encountered incorporate like frankincense because that is found in Oman, right? I think that's a kind of a native resource. That and ambergris, which I think somebody had told me that ambergris kind of washes up on the shores around Oman, which I thought was really cool. And obviously, like, it's a small country, but it has a long-standing history of fragrance. And amouage being kind of the, I guess, like, the ambassador of Oman via scent. Like, how do you incorporate, like, you talked a bit about the generosity, but, like, how do you incorporate that via raw materials into the fragrances?
Yeah, that's a good point. So indeed, the very first amouage fragrances that were named Goldman and Goldwoman created in 1983 by Guiraud contained three ingredients from Oman plus other ingredients from all around the world. But those three ingredients were frankincense, rose that we call the rock rose because it grows in the Rocky Mountains of Oman, and ambergris, indeed. You know, they became a little bit like the signature ingredients of amouage, which means that you have them in most of amouage fragrances, not all of them, but in most of them. And why do I say most of them? Because sometimes it's not that much about the ingredients themselves, but it's about their functional impact on the fragrance. Mm-hmm. So frankincense is a resin, and you have resins actually in most of amouage fragrances. Resins are quite interesting because they are quite complex ingredients. They impact usually the top notes, the heart notes, and the base notes of the fragrances. So I like to say that frankincense represents the complexity of an amouage fragrance. Mm. The rose, you have it in some of the fragrances, not all of them, but we do like to have a floral ingredient, a classic floral ingredient in most of our fragrances, because it gives, you know, that touch of classicism that is important in amouage fragrances. And then ambergris is a very potent fixative. So you add actually ambergris to any fragrance, and that fragrance is going to be very long-lasting. It's going to have this beautiful patina. And actually, you know, whether we use frankincense infusion, so frankincense tincture, or whether we use sometimes actually synthetic, you know, derivatives, we love actually to create long-lasting fragrances.
On that same tip of, you know, the complexity and the strength, we know, like, you know, that there are many trends in fragrance going on right now, none of which we really ascribe to, but we are surrounded by. There is the layering, there is the fragrance wardrobing, there are the beast mode fragrances, all of that. How do you think, I mean, I'm just, I guess, interested in your perspective of where amouage exists within that, competes within that, doesn't even need to. I personally am not a layerer, and I definitely wouldn't layer an amouage fragrance because it is so complex and strong. But I think that there are a lot of consumers that do think more is more. So how do you sort of exist within that conversation, or if you do at all?
Well, I think amouage definitely proposes fragrances that are long-lasting and quite diffusive. So from that point of view, you know, when you say beast mode fragrances and so on, I definitely think that the fact that amouage fragrances are long-lasting and are complex and very diffusive, I mean, it definitely plays in that trend of like potent fragrances. And why is that important? Because I think people who pay a certain amount of money for fragrances do expect their fragrances to last. They do expect to get compliments and so on. If you pay, you know, $300 or more for a fragrance, you don't want that fragrance to disappear after 1 hour. Like, you don't. But at the same time, you know, I mean, it's relatively easy to create a beast mode fragrance. As you said, you just, you know, like you pack it with a few like amber woods and so on, and or maltol and all of that, and you get... You get something very punchy, potent, and beast mode, but it's not what we want to do at amouage, because at amouage, you know, the challenge is how do you create a fragrance that has like this amazing technical behavior, but at the same time that is very refined and nuanced and so on. This is the complexity of what we do. So definitely amouage, I think, fits in that trend, or at least, you know, I mean, it's more than a trend, I think, by now. really something that has been driving the perfumery for quite some time. Now, when it comes to layering, I mean, I feel like layering is something that has been pushed a lot by, you know, business people in the industry, because obviously it's a way to sell more fragrances. And I mean, I agree with you, like an amouage fragrance is a complex fragrance by definition, but at the same time, who am I to say, you know, like that people should not wear, like if you know, if they find the combination or something that they like and so on, or... I mean, when you talk about layering, like, I think there is also a misconception that some people think that this is about mixing several fragrances together, which, like, proper layering is actually the idea of wearing several fragrances at the same time, but being able to keep their distinct character as well, which I think is really interesting. So take, and this is something people in the Middle East region, for example, understand very well. They understand the fact that an eau de parfum or an eau de toilette is going to have a very different behavior than, let's say, a body oil, a pure oil, or even, you know, the idea of using smoke to perfume yourself, which we call. And I think this is, you know, when you reach that level of expertise and you understand intuitively how different perfume concentrations, you know, react and behave and so on. That's when I think you end up with doing, I mean, informed layering, and it becomes quite interesting.
Right. And amouage has the attars, which are the oils. So I feel like when people layer, they'll do an oil and then they'll spray something on top for a long-lasting base.
Well, the way I see people doing it, and the way I like to do it is slightly different. So usually I would wear an eau de parfum, one of our eau de parfum or extrait, and I would wear it around my neck and maybe on my clothes. And then after that, I would apply an attar, so pure oil, for example, on my wrist. Okay, so the beauty of it is the following. Like, let's say that I'm going to go for dinner with you, and we hug, you know, you're going to smell my fragrance. Mm-hmm. And you're going to think, okay, Renaud is wearing Guinness. And then we are going to sit down, we are going to cheer or something like that. And as I cheer, I'm going to project actually the attar I'm wearing. And, you know, I'm wearing two different fragrances at the same time. I'm not mixing them together because they remain distinct. And I find that really interesting because, I mean, you are going to smell two very different fragrances coming from me. And I might even myself, you know, enjoy whenever I'm moving and so on, I'm going to enjoy a different fragrance. And I find that quite interesting.
So it's an issue of geography on the body. That's a cool idea. I like that. Speaking of the extraits, I know that I feel like Amouage's Eau de Parfums are so... they already have a very strong projection and sillage, and a few select fragrances will then graduate to become an extrait. And after the name, there's usually a number like 45, 50. And if I remember correctly, is that the oil concentration?
Exactly.
Okay. Oh my gosh. 50% oil. That's insane.
That's wild.
I know.
That would take me out.
Yeah.
And so... there are a few interesting facts behind that. So first of all, I think it's important for everyone to know that the wording in the perfume industry, so take, let's say, eau de toilette, eau de parfum, extrait, is not regulated. So you can call anything whatever you want. Like I can call a perfume actually with 1% perfume concentrate and 99% alcohol, I can call that an extreme extrait if I want to, and nobody is going to sue me, which is a bit wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the idea behind actually mentioning the concentration of the exceptional extrait is actually to share transparently the actual concentration of the products. And by the way, if you want to know the concentration of any amouage fragrance, we reveal it transparently. And the same goes for the aging of the fragrances and so on. Why is that? Because I think it gives an important piece of information that tells you about the potential behavior of the fragrance. The higher the concentration, usually the more complex the evolution of the fragrance. However, there is very often a misconception or several misconceptions. One, a higher concentration does not mean a better fragrance. Okay, and then I mentioned at the very beginning the example of Eau Sauvage from Dior. It's a fragrance that was notoriously at a very, very low concentration. But it was an amazing fragrance because of the ingredients, because of the aging process of that fragrance and so on. But coming back to Amouage, so what is really important is, I always say, for me, the objective is not to work at the highest concentration, is to work at the right concentration. Now, let's take an example of Guidance. So Guidance contains 25% pure perfume oil, so a quarter
which
of the
quite bottle, strong as it is.
Quite a lot. However, we take Guidance 46, and Guidance 46, it goes actually from 25% to 46%. But the formula of the concentrate is different, okay? And let me try to explain the difference from an olfactive point of view. So imagine that the fragrance experience of Guidance, you know, is a spectrum that goes from like top notes, heart notes, and base notes, but ultimately, you know, covers like a specific spectrum. The X-ray usually would give you the possibility to widen that spectrum, which means that you're not only going to have like deeper and more complex base notes and so on, but it gives you also the possibility to have a wider complexity of top notes, for example, which means that you could literally create an impression with an X-ray if you wanted to, freshness, you know, of something that could actually feel potentially at first fresher than the eau de parfum. So that's technically actually possible. It would be a little bit counterintuitive, I think, for clients. So usually clients expect an extrait to be denser, richer, and more powerful than an eau de parfum. But it takes, you know, it takes quite some technical skills and so on to get to that level, because by definition, the higher your oil concentration, the lower your alcohol. And the alcohol is the element in the fragrance that is responsible for this burst, you know, that you get at the beginning. And so if your concentration is lower, by definition, you're going to have the impression that the fragrance is less impactful at first, which is quite misleading for clients, because sometimes you see that you see regularly that some clients say, you know what, I have the impression that the eau de parfum is actually stronger than the extrait, which is like the whole complexity of the concentration.
That's interesting.
Crazy. I've never thought of it like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's some great insight.
I know. I don't think people realize that the alcohol does have a function in a fragrance.
Yeah, right.
It does.
Not just filler.
It does. But then, I mean, if you think that way, then, you know, it leads me to, I'd love to talk actually about the essences. So the essences are fragrances that were somehow born a little bit from that thinking. Mm-hmm. Imagine, you know, let's go back to Guidance. I mentioned Guidance is 25% of concentrate and 75% of ethanol, of alcohol. You mentioned that the alcohol has a role, you know, when it comes to the evaporation, creating the burst and so on, but the alcohol does not smell. Mm-hmm. Which is a bit of a shame, because it means that three quarters of the bottle don't smell. So that was the starting point of the thinking. What if we were able actually to make that ethanol, that alcohol, smell? What if we were to age the alcohol in wooden barrels to create, you know, a woody patina to the ethanol that then actually would be used to dilute the concentrate and would actually add an extra woody patina to the fragrance.
Whoa, that's so cool.
And that's what the essences are all about. So the essences are fragrances that are aged for a total of 6 months. And the way they are aged, the ethanol is aged in wooden barrels, and the concentrate is infused with sandalwood chips. The two of them separately, that's why we call that process the double infusion process. And then at the end of the 6 months, we proceed with the dilution. So we put 30% of concentrate, 70% of ethanol. and you end up with a product that has a very unique patina and very unique smell.
Interesting.
I've never heard of that approach before. Yeah. That's so interesting.
I mean, wow. We love to experiment at Amouage. That's the beauty of having, you know, your own manufacturer, and also the beauty of being in Oman, because by definition, people take their time in Oman. Mm-hmm. I don't have anyone asking me, you know, to release fragrances within a certain time mm-hmm. frame or something like that.
Wow. Wow. That's so cool.
I know. I love to share all of that because, you know, I feel, I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, but I feel perfumery over like the past decades has been built on a mystique, you know, on like a lot of I feel perfumery has been built on the idea of on allowing some extrapolations that went a little bit too far. And those mm-hmm. extrapolations are like, you know what? I am using actually a drop of rose oil in my perfume. I'm going to give you the impression that actually half of the perfume is rose oil, you know, or something. Mm. And ultimately, it's beautiful to make people dream to see, you know, those beautiful rose harvest or vanilla or whatever and so on. And I felt, you know, that it was important to bring back a little bit of serious pragmatism into it because you want to make sure that, you know, you don't create this weird disconnect between the messages that we give and what people smell. You know, I think there's nothing more disappointing than if I tell you, listen, you're going to smell rose and vanilla and so on, mm-hmm. and you don't smell any of that. You smell a bit of a soup and you need to trust me that there is rose. So in order to get there, you know, I think I just wanted actually to share a bit more transparently what we do at Amouage, and I think this is a good platform from that point of view. So thank you for giving me that opportunity.
Anytime. Our door is always open for a conversation like this. We love transparency on this podcast.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, we're both big fans of Amouage. The scents are so beautiful, and the bottles and the packaging, everything is so exquisite. So we're big appreciators of your work. I feel like a 50% fragrance would just...
You know that would take me out. I'm not strong.
I was
going
to say, I wanted to say it would kill me. And then I was like, I don't want to make
it. It would kill me. Yeah. Listen, you know it would be an oud too. It would just whack me, knock my jaw right off. No, I loved it though. I've been crying about things not lasting long enough on me lately for God knows what reason. So maybe they are speaking my language.
I have a bottle of guidance and I have a bottle of love to light, which I really like as well. And that's kind of their, it's sort of like a chewy candy floral almost in like a lactonic, creamy way, not in like a candy way. It's so good. Those two scents I have to wear the same way I wear Mugler Angel, and that I spray it in the air and then run through it.
That's it.
Like that's the only way I can have it touch me. And I'm still smelling it at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like I am.
I wore Guidance earlier this week and again, it was just sort of like, you know, I get it. I really get it. And it didn't, I know that that formulation isn't like so crazy, but it gave me that exact wear that I wanted out of something. No, it's like when I went to bed that night, I was like, thank you for sticking around.
I'm really curious to smell the essences.
Yeah, same.
I'm unfamiliar with them, but the bottles are gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
And the scent profiles sound really interesting. They're the one called Luster. I really want to smell that. And that's also
such a good name.
I love the one called Reasons. What are you wearing? I'm wearing Reasons.
It's so funny.
I love these abstract conceptual names because I just think it's so funny to say when someone asks you what you're wearing. It's like, what are you wearing? Purpose.
Right.
I'm wearing existence.
But also his story behind each of them too. Yeah, it was so interesting.
Yeah.
It was like, that's like so beautiful. And you would never get that out of a name, you know?
I know. I also love the idea of a tree deciding, no, I'm going to grow. I will not let this lightning strike hold me back.
Right, right.
It's very cute. I like it.
This is very cute.
Yeah. Well, if you love that episode, please tell us in all the platforms in which you can with 5 stars, please. Check out our website. We're at smellyoulater.live where you can leave us a voice note. You can find our cute and cozy merch. Follow us on Instagram. We're at smellyoulater.mp3. I'm at Sabletooth Tikra.
I'm at Trent Buck. And until next time, we will smell you later.
Later. This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.